Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks for joining me today. This is June 26th, a special day, but many people may not realize it. Now, just yesterday, we celebrated the presentation of the Augsburg Confession, a great day in the history of the church. Also, today, on June 26th, a little bit different day, we celebrate the work and ministry of Directors of Christian Education. Over 50 years, about 56 years now, Directors of Christian Education have been recognized in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. June 26th in 2009 was declared as National LCMS Director of Christian Education Day, recognizing the 50th anniversary of the Synod's DCEs. Now, throughout time, over 1,700 individuals have been certified as DCEs and serve in the LCMS, and many of them today, many serve full-time, some serve part-time, some serve in parishes, some serve in institutions, camps, and other settings. What is a DCE? We'll talk about that in just a little bit. We'll talk about DCEs, the history of DCEs. We have some great conversations and some call-ins from folks as well. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Before we get to that, I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website, KFUO.org. Today, we'll talk with Bill Karpenko. He's Dr. William Karpenko, served as the Director of Christian Education Program, the Director of the DCE Program at Concordia, a couple of the Concordia universities, Concordia University in Chicago, where I studied to become a DCE. Most recently, he served at Valparaiso University. And we'll also talk with a DCE serving in a parish. We'll talk with Shelley Haynes later on in the program. And throughout the program, you'll hear from DCEs and others throughout our church body talking about the ministry of DCEs. Hope you enjoy the conversations. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, I'm Kathy Schermbeck, and I'm a DCE at Faith Lutheran Church in Georgetown, Texas. I love DCE ministry. I love youth ministry. I love being with DCEs, such a creative and passionate and enthusiastic group of Jesus followers. Doug Widger from St. Paul, Fort Worth, has been a huge influence on my development as a DCE and has poured into me and mentored me and blessed me. And I'm also incredibly grateful for the service of Jonathan Lesh, who I serve with at Faith Georgetown. He's my kid's DCE, and he's fantastic. Thank you so much for celebrating National DCE Day. Hi, my name is Lauren Bates, and I'm a Director of Christian Education at St. Mark's Lutheran in Eureka, Missouri. The thing I love most about being a DCE is being able just to help families as they grow in their faith and then pass that faith on to their children, and just being a part of their lives each and every day, not only in church, but also outside of church. One of the most influential DCEs in my life is Joy Schubert. She was crucial in my development early on in my career. She just had such a true love and joy for God's people and children, and she was such a compassionate person with a servant's heart. And I was able to see how God's love working through her was such a blessing to those around her. Thank you.
Hi there, this is Vanessa Seifert, Presentational DCE from Calvary Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska. As I think about DCEs who have mentored and inspired me, first on the list is the sainted Mike Hines. Mike was a well-known DCE with over three decades of ministry experience in a variety of settings. But most importantly, Mike was the son of the King who loved and inspired others along his journey wherever he went. As I think about how I met Mike, I can't help but recall how he reached out to me during my first call at Pilgrim Lutheran in Bellevue, Nebraska, when he was serving at King of Kings in Omaha. We attended the same DC cluster meeting, and something in Mike prompted him to reach out to me. He must have spotted a green DCE who was eager to learn, grow, and serve. So what began as skill development sessions transitioned into Christ-focused monthly mentoring sessions with Mike, his ministry team, and eventually with his wife, Francie. Mike walked with me during my first decade of ministry. He walked with me when I pushed pause in parish ministry to finish a degree. He also walked with me when I returned back to BC ministry. Sadly, Mike wasn't able to meet my daughter because he passed away in May of 2014. I know that my daughter Victoria would have been just as taken with Mike as all of us, those who are privileged to know Mike, were taken with him. I'll be forever touched by Mike's inspiration and mentorship. He truly is a DC to remember.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Joining us today, Dr. William O. Karpenko II. He's the Operations Director of Kindle. He served for a number of years in Christian education and particularly in higher education settings, most recently at Valparaiso University. And he's also served as a youth minister, a missionary, and social worker. Dr. Karpenko, welcome to Faith and Family.
My pleasure, Andy. I'm just delighted to be with you.
Thank you. Glad to have you with us today. Looking forward to talking about directors of Christian education today. Tell us about yourself and how you came to study and prepare for vocations in Christian education.
Like many young people who at the time were searching for what would happen in their future, I had a marvelous, marvelous pastor by the name of Norman Behrman, who was heavily involved as the youth pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Oklahoma City. And he came alongside of me one day and said, there's a new new program that's developing at a university called Valparaiso, and they have now a youth leadership training program. And given all of your involvement with young people, your peers, and your love of serving in the church, this could possibly be a wonderful vocation for you. That's how it then turned out. After 4 years at Valparaiso, I ended up at St. Luke in Cheektowaga, New York, as a minister of youth. And then, of course, from there, ended up on a couple mission fields in youth ministry. But what a glorious start, and what a wonderful intervention by Norm Behrman, who sensed my gifts and gave me a direction.
Well, thanks be to God for that. Today, we are celebrating directors of Christian education. What is, from your perspective, Bill, what is a DCE?
A director of Christian education is an individual who is committed to work in a multiple staff or team ministry with a pastor and others, with a focus on lifespan education that often leads that individual to work more intensely with children or teenagers, young adults, and of course, anyone who works with children and youth works with their parents. And so lifespan really is a key word. Lifespan education specialist is really what a DCE is.
And so what are some of the earliest examples of Christian educators throughout history, as far back as we know?
Well, let me just take a pass, all right, on digging through the scripture and all of those marvelous examples there. What really began to happen in this the country that we live in, obviously, was the Sunday school movement and this keen desire by various denominations to form the spiritual well-being and understanding of those under their care. So whether it was young people or parents or whatever, you have, for example, in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, here we have this grassroots movement called the Walther League. Again, designed to impact and shape and form the spiritual life of young people and young adults. And so concurrently, of course, that was in 1893. Concurrently, you have in the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Congregational Church denomination, et cetera, the growth of a kind of church worker called a director of Christian education. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod came to this this kind of congregational related position somewhat later, but you find in the 1940s, 1950s, a growing number of individuals who were responding to the congregational need that was so evident, especially in the 1950s after World War II was over and there was a baby boom and you had a lot of young people that were available and active, or at least could be active in a congregational setting. So that's a kind of a quick look, Andy. We can talk in more detail if you wanted, but that really brings us into the 1960s.
And let's talk about that, some of the first DCE types in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
They were primarily individuals who came out of the classroom ministry and congregations, either because their parishes were closing a school or because these people had special gifts in music and ability to relate to young people. That examples of this, for example, would be a guy named Larry Steyer. Marvelous individual, able to work with young people. So at Trinity Mission, Kansas, in the 50s, here was a guy who would bring to an international Walter Lee convention, would bring 50, 60 young people. And imagine this, all wearing the same color T-shirts. Now, we do that these days at national youth gatherings. But way, way back in the early 50s, I saw this in 1957, just remarkable presence and impact that this kind of person was making on young people.
And so when did we first see DCEs, the Director of Christian Education, become an official recognized position, profession in the LCMS?
Well, as you may recall, there was a synodical convention that in particular in 1959 in San Francisco said, you know, we have these kinds of workers now that are emerging more and more, and we wish to, in essence, bless that and say and encourage that our two major four-year schools begin to train these people. And so in 1962, this kind of resolution reemerged. And then you had Concordia Seward in 1965 create what was called a fifth-year program. So if a person went through a four years of schooling and had a teacher's degree, they could stay another year and be equipped to work as a DCE type person. And of course, River Forest, right alongside of this, was placing individuals who were classroom teachers into DCE type calls, and they were beginning to mushroom. And suddenly in 1969, then you had a very creative endeavor launched by Concordia St. Paul, in which it said, we're going to train DCEs no longer as classroom teachers. They certainly will be congregational teachers in the fullest sense, but they will not have that dual certification. And so that really brings us then to the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. And what do we see in the 1970s with the DCE?
What happened then at that point was Concordia, now called Nebraska, or Concordia teachers' college in those days in Seward created its 5-year undergraduate DC program, quickly followed by Concordia River Forest, and now Concordia Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so there were then those three schools which began to, under the Synod's guidance, began to meet regularly, share ideas about curriculum, lots of wonderful collaborative effort. And then fairly soon after that, Concordia Irvine opened its DCE program, 1980. Concordia Portland opened its DCE program. And then there was a kind of a hiatus in which I just say there was no further movement until the mid-1990s, and Concordia Austin mm-hmm. then opened its Director of Christian Education program. So currently within our Synod, we have these six opportunities to study as a DCE at varying places around the country.
So DCE programs at the Concordia colleges, Concordia universities, continue to grow and develop over those times. How has the DCE vocation changed over time? You mentioned earlier some of the early DCEs were primarily classroom teachers who were given to serve in a congregational setting, many of them with experience in music and leading youth. How has this DCE changed over time? What does it look like today?
As one looks at it today, there are a handful of fairly obvious changes. One is that there are many more women mm-hmm. now serving as DCEs than in the 50s and 60s. Second, and related to that, there are many more women, married women, and women with families who are serving as directors of Christian education. Related to that, then, the environment in which one is ministering has really dramatically changed. Whether we talk simply in terms of what we now live with every day, and that is this technological world, which has so changed modes of communication, actually some would argue has changed young people's attention capacities, and on and on. Also, this is a very different world in one in which one ministers, particularly in terms of parental mm-hmm. sensitivity and concern for their children and young people, what happens to them, how far they let them out of their reach or purview, just greater sensitivity that way. The pace of life, believe it or not, just is intensified. Related to that is accessibility. As one ministers these days, as a DCE, which is primarily a programmatic kind of ministry, obviously also deeply committed to relationships and one-on-one work, but it becomes a question of, is my person I'm ministering to, like a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old, are they available for a weekend lock-in? Are they available to go on a servant mission trip? And so accessibility to young people and children and their families is just tightened a great deal. Obviously, there's a growing number of families and young people and children in which the biblical story has really sort of never been a central part. And so both biblical understanding and faith commitment can be really fairly shallow. Now, that's great opportunity, but it still is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the sort of initial changes that one might talk about. And if you want to pursue one of those a little more, we can do that, or you may see something yourself.
How and where do you see DCEs serving today? I know you're connected with a lot of DCEs across the country, really around the world, through your work with Kindle. How and where do you see DCEs serving today?
Well, they continue to be what we would refer to as second chair people or third chair people, meaning that they are faithful, strong, loyal, gifted staff mates of one pastor, two pastors, or it may be that there is another set of church workers, such as parish musicians, obviously, and a family life minister or a deaconess or whatever it may be. So that is a constant that has been there for many, many, many decades, and that is the incredible importance of being on a strong, positive, productive staff. They continue to work across the lifespan. Again, some DCEs are very gifted with children, some extremely gifted with teenagers, others are really excellent at adult ministries, adult education, those areas, and so you find a variety of, in a sense, foci. There are, again, DCEs who find themselves heavily involved in assimilation or outreach. You know, there's a growing emphasis on life outside the parish in one's community and in servant ministry type experiences. And so the sort of thread that works through all of these positions is that these are educators, individuals who have a passion for engaging people in teaching, learning situations, growing together, whether it's in a class type setting or an experiential setting when you're on a mission trip or some other kind of experience. So some things really have been similar over all these years.
What is, Bill, what's your encouragement to DCEs today as we celebrate Directors of Christian Education? What's your word of encouragement?
I would just say hallelujah. Thank God for the opportunity, and especially to continue to lend one's deep passion and love of the church. It is so important these days with so many who are hurting and lost or looking for deeper answers in a way of life that following Christ provides. And so I just say take heart, even though sometimes it can be a little complex or difficult to work with other people so intensely like DCs do. These are God's people. They are precious people, and it is a privilege to be, again, called into this kind of professional ministry. And so I'm excited about what the future can hold. It is indeed pretty daunting for all of us living in these days, but to be clear that one is a called child of God who has a ministry to share within a staff setting and in a parish setting, is it's a marvelous place to be.
Our guest today has been Dr. William O. Karpenko II, Operations Director of Kindle, and a friend of many DCEs, and one of my professors as well at Concordia University, Chicago. Dr. Karpenko, thank you so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family. It's been great talking with you about DCEs today.
What a pleasure and a privilege. I'm delighted, Andy, and blessings upon your very, very vital ministry.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Friday, June 26th, 2015. Today's day sponsor is Nancy Ponovas. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in honor of Dan and Kathy Schoenherr from Frohna, Missouri, as they celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary today. Once again, we say thank you to Nancy Ponovas of Alton, Illinois, today's Worldwide KFUO day sponsor.
My name is Jeremy Becker. I'm a DCE at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Weston, Florida. I am very thankful for the opportunity that God gave me to work with Ben Freudenberg. I learned so many things about ministry and working with teams and staff and personal time and ministry opportunities from Ben that have helped me so often throughout the many years of ministry that I've been able to serve.
Hi, this is Pastor Marcus Zill, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, wanting to give a shout-out to all of you DCEs out there who are engaged in campus ministry, people like Inez Dahl at the University of California in Santa Cruz, Eric Dunn at SIU in Edwardsville, Ron Dupree at the University of North Texas in Denton, Barb Hertling, St. Cloud State University in Minnesota, Steve Wilson at Ferris State University in Big Rapids, Michigan, and Greg Widow at Eastern Illinois University. Did I miss you? Or are you a DCE interested in doing campus ministry going forward? Drop me a note. Let's talk. You can reach me and learn more about LCMSU at lcms.org/LCMSU. That's lcms.org/LCMSU. But for now, thanks to all of our DCEs and your passion for the young people of Christ Church. Go DCEs, go.
Pastor Bart Day, I think DCEs are an asset because they lift up one of the most important pieces of a congregation's life, and that's teaching the faith, catechizing, parish-based education. They're uniquely trained and skilled to help us unpack the Word of God, understand what it means for us in our day and age, and an application to our daily life. The encouragement to DCEs is to hang in there. We understand that oftentimes, too oftentimes, they're the forgotten church workers, but we deeply appreciate what they do for the church, for youth and for adults alike, and pray that as we revitalize congregations, the work of parish education and DCEs will continue to be an integral part of that work.
Hello, this is David Fiala. I'm a DCE, and I serve the Office of International Mission here in St. Louis at the International Center as a missionary recruiter. For 10 years of my life, though, I did spend as a missionary in the foreign field, and as today is National DCE Day, I thought I'd like to put in a plug and advertise any DCEs who want to be missionaries. We have roles for you in the field. You would do things such as evangelism and or education or any combination of the both. You would do youth work. You would do teacher training. You could do event planning and implementation. You could do catechesis. You could do teaching. You could do administration. As you can imagine, being a DCE in a foreign country is not too different from being a DCE in America. You get to tell people about Jesus and why it matters. Happy DCE Day, everybody.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Joining me by phone today, Shelley Haynes. She's the Director of Christian Education and Family Ministry at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Shelley, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us today and to have a chance to talk with a fellow DCE as we celebrate National DCE Day here on Faith and Family today. Shelley, tell us, when did you first learn about DCEs? What was your first experience hearing what a DCE was, or maybe meeting a DCE for the first time?
Oh, good. Yeah. So I did not grow up in the church. My parents weren't in a spot where they were doing that in their life. And so kind of grew up searching, feeling that yearning for something, and I didn't realize exactly what it was. A friend brought me to church when I was 12. And when I came right to the premises, I met the pastor. And in truth, that pastor really adopted, the pastor and that whole congregation really adopted my brother and I. A lot of times we would go to church, but we would walk to church and or walk home. Our parents would drop us off one way or the other, but we sat in church alone. We learned how to worship with the church guiding us. I have to confess, not the greatest worshiper in the world, fiddling around, doing different things. I can remember German women saying, that's not how you worship. And about 4 months after I arrived at that church, which was in Northern California, Mark Blanke came and was our DCE. And I had no idea what that meant or anything, but he came to my house and he sat in my living room and he got to know my parents. And he sat in the darkness of the home that I lived in and he accepted all of us. He just loved us. He was kind of a Jesus with skin on. Mm-hmm. And Mark was at Holy Cross for, to me, it seems like 6 or 7 years, but I don't know what the actual amount is. And he drove me back and forth to youth group, or I would get a ride there, and sometimes he would drive me home, and he would ask me, you know, what my goals were for my life, and I wanted to be a hairdresser. And Mark laughed and said, no, I think you're going to be a DCE. And that's when I sort of learned what it looked like. But I didn't realize that he worked during the week. I thought he just came and had fun hanging out with us on the weekends, you know, and that maybe he just knew all that stuff about the Bible. And during that 1 hour on Sunday morning, he would work in quotes. So I didn't really know what it was. But I loved that he was able to have a connection. I mean, he was, when I went to the prom, he came and took pictures. I felt super valued. And I felt that maybe God valued me because I saw what Mark was showing me. He was sort of a hands and feet type ministry. So I think Mark Blanke was a huge influence for me.
Having met Mark, I could see him doing all those things that you've described. Who was the pastor that you said who cared for you and your brother so deeply?
So his name was Richard Wolkenhauer. And, you know, there's a ton of wonderful pastors. You know, and the Synod has a ton of people that are wonderful. But, you know, there's just at the very top, there's those people that he very self, he didn't care so much about him getting any glory or honor. He very much seemed like he was Jesus, sarcastic, but in a real kind way. And when my mom would show up to church the 2 times a year she would go, or, you know, when it was my mom's funeral, I mean, he came and visited my mom in the month that she had in between diagnosis and her death, and reminded her of the things that she was taught when she was a kid. After she died, I found this Bible and it had all these wonderful passages in it. You know, he loved her. He showed her, you know, you don't have to be afraid. God loves you. And it was really just, it really tremendous. And, he was fantastic. And I would say, I talked with Mark about this as an adult. He would say one of the finest pastors to work with too. He's just a really great guy.
Well, thanks be to God for those great people that he placed in your life to bring you the Word of God and to bring you into that fold, to be a part of that family, that congregation there. And so as you learned more about becoming, learned more about a DCE, when was it that you decided that, okay, this is what I'm going to do? I'm going to pursue the education and this path to become a DCE.
Well, Mark had developed a system in our youth group where those that sort of wanted to pursue a little bit more leadership in the way of leadership or learning could, and a few of us did, and I was one of them. But then he left. He took a call, I think, to Chicago, and then the youth group was without a person, and I stepped into that role with another student who's now a pastor in St. Louis or in Missouri. He's in Columbia, Scott Jonas. He's a DCE, but is now a pastor. We ran the youth group together, but I didn't have the money to go to Concordia, and my parents were very skeptical of me going to a Lutheran college, and so they wouldn't pay for it. And this is so remarkable, but I needed $5,143 to go to school. And I had filled out every paper, every FAFSA, every scholarship I could think of. And unbeknownst to me, Pastor Wolkenhauer knew of a fund in the Bay Area. This plumber who didn't have any children left an endowment for people who wanted to pursue church work. And a Reverend Joe Schruhl, who's up in the Bay Area, he came in his black Corvette to my front door, talked to my mom. My mom let him in. It was so weird. I mean, just the whole thing was very God. Now, reading it, it's kind of like the Old Testament stories where you're not supposed to win this battle, but you win it anyway, you know? Got in there, had coffee with my mom, charmed the pants off of her. They were chatting. And then I came in and met him, and he said, okay, well, I'd like to let you know, Shelley was entered into this scholarship by your pastor, and we have a scholarship award of $5,143, the exact amount of money that I needed. And my mom knew that it was the exact amount. It was the second time in my life I ever saw her cry. And so I went to Concordia Irvine because it was the closest one to my home. Steve Christopher was the DCE program director, and I had just, I don't know, I had never gone to a real biblical training. So at the same time as I was learning how to be a DCE, I was learning the narrative of the story of God and really understanding what law and gospel meant and grace. And those things were, oh, I mean, you know, mind boggling. Yeah. And then to think that you get to share that gift with other people was overwhelming in a really exciting way. But I think Steve did a good job of sort of, Steve was sort of a DCE towards us, college students. And it was a great group of students. I mean, really was blessed to have a lot of other students that were lifelong Lutherans. So they would, I would be like, is this amazing? You know, and then Jim Meyer would be like, yeah, it's amazing. Let's tell other people. Wouldn't that be great? You know? So that was kind of special. So that environment was for me kind of a secondary youth group. And, I did a lot of things at Concordia Irvine that really helped prepare me and shape me to, you know, the mechanics of DCE ministry, the day by day, talking to people, evangelism, those types of things.
Did you have professors at Concordia University Irvine that really stood out for you, or that yeah. really shaped what you learned and how you approach things?
Yeah, and you know, I still live in Southern California, so I'm sort of blessed to be able to see them from time to time. But Rod Rosenblatt is an amazing apologetics and real doctrine-centered prof, and has a very eclectic style. If you ever met him, you would never forget him, you know. But he really made the Bible less of a scary, dusty book on the shelf, and more of an approachable. Get into the way. I can remember him, like his eyes bulging out. I can still remember that. this is for you. You know? And then Ken Schlichtemeyer was more of a teacher. He taught classes for teachers, but he really taught me how to think about what are the objectives to a lesson plan, and how do you what are you aiming for? Because if you're not aiming for anything, you're not going to know if you succeeded or if you failed. And then strangely, well, maybe not that strangely. Peter Sinkfeil, who was the theater department chair at the time and has moved up the ladder, he was very influential in things like group dynamics or using different methods to be able to have students get sort of out of themselves and maybe and discover the scriptures in a different way. And so a lot of times when I'm teaching different stories in the Bible, especially to the children that I work with now, we'll act it out or we'll show it through different people, plays or things. And the kids, it really, for some kids, it's a real, like, oh, that's eye-opening for them, you know. Brings it alive.
Sure. I have a communications background as well, as, you know, as the DCE education. And every day, every time that I'm serving in the parish or teaching, I think how helpful that communications and theater background is for, you know, certain situations like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very helpful. I can certainly understand that. So you had great professors and mentors along the way in your studies at Concordia Irvine. Anything else about your experience there at Concordia University Irvine before we throw you out into the world?
Well, I mean, and even sitting here thinking, as I've gotten older, this is my 19th year that I've been blessed to do ministry. And in the beginning, the profs I mentioned were real staples, and I got by on a lot of energy. I'm pretty energetic and a lot of passion. I'm pretty passionate. But as I got older, I realized, that isn't really always glorifying to God, because it's about me, not about the scriptures and not about what God is doing. And B, there has to be something a little deeper in the well if you're going to continue to do this type of ministry over a long period of time. And I remember having a class with Mark Brighton, in which he would tell us, he would do the study from the New Testament and then realize that he was reading it all in the original language. And he really promoted this idea of study and continuing on. And so that led me to a master's degree from Concordia Seward in family ministry, and then a host of amazing people, profs there at the college, but also people that were in the field doing wonderful things, like Dean Natisty, or there's a guy, Sonnenberg was mm-hmm. one of our, and my mind is just kind of blown is just seeing their names and remembering how we would learn and grow and develop a deeper understanding of what, you know, family ministry and how that applies to the DCE field as well. So education's been a huge impact on me as well.
Hmm. You were talking about a professor reading from the original languages as teaching the scriptures. And I remember the first time that I witnessed that, realized that my Old Testament professor at Concordia in River Forest, Dr. Nathan Jastrom, was reading and translating in his head from the Old Testament. He was reading in Hebrew and translating in his head as he spoke. And it probably took me a few weeks before I realized it. Once I realized, he is not looking at anything English. Anything, nothing in the English language. It's all in Hebrew.
That's just mind-boggling and wonderful, you know?
I was just, my mind was blown as to how he was keeping up with what we were reading in English. The man speaks five languages fluently, so perhaps I shouldn't be surprised. He's quite the scholar. But isn't that amazing that we have these gifts of professors who can look at the original languages and study and teach us God's word and help us understand it so that we can be faithful in our services as DCEs in teaching God's word too. As we learn from them, then we can pass that on as well.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
So you went on to Concordia, Nebraska, studied there in a family life and found that to be useful as well. Tell us about your early days as a DCE. Tell us about internship.
Oh, okay. So as you might have already guessed from the cartoon existence that I have been living with these crazy, fantastical stories, the Lord really has, I've got quite a ping pong sort of ministry even. I was very... I don't even know the right word. It's so funny. I'm not that person anymore. So telling this is kind of funny to me. So every year at Concordia Irvine, they would pick a student of the year. And I don't think they do that anymore, which is probably a great thing. And I was one of two, Jim Meyer and myself, were student of the year. And ended up going to, quote unquote, the best church in our district. And I had an opportunity to worship and grow and learn at a church that was giant and old. And I knew nothing of tradition, because, you know, remember my mom was Lutheran, but she had not long since given up on God or the church by the time she had me. And so I did go to church as a junior high and high school student, but I didn't get tradition. I didn't understand the Lutheran way of doing things at all. And I was at a church where it was a go, go, go kind of mentality, which I loved. I felt like I am the best student ever, and this is a perfect place for me because how lucky are they to have me type thing. And I had 100 kids come to youth group, and I've never had that since. And loved it. But put my foot in it and ended up being I had to repeat my internship for a month. It was a crazy, giant, too boring story to talk about. and ended up going to a very small, awesome, very off the charts Lutheran church in a different county close by us. And spent 7 years there, worked my tail off. And I had heard someone say, which I shouldn't have done, but I heard someone say, you know, this is for God, so you need to give it all of your effort. And all of my effort meant I worked 100 hours a week. I worked 100 hours a week on my internship. I worked 100 hours a week the first 8 years of ministry. I mean, maybe more, which is ridiculous thinking about it now. I was married. I got married my first year of ministry. So that was tough. And he was like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing. We're both first career church workers. And we just never saw each other forever. Mm-hmm. And every anniversary we spent on a youth trip. It was ridiculous. And but I really thought that's what I was supposed to do, because I thought that's what it meant to be a good church worker and to do the right thing. About 6 years into our marriage, we had our first daughter, and everyone kept saying, oh my gosh, it gets so busy once you have kids, you know, this is going to be tough. And we slowed down. It really allowed us. It was kind of like God going, stop it. The ministry will continue without you. and so I was able to, the church that I was serving at that time called me 2 months after I got there. I was just youth ministry there. I think I just did high school and eventually later started junior high and a little bit with women. But as I said, it was a small place. So when we had our daughter, everybody, I mean, Megan was just part of the conversation, part of the family of that church. I went to part-time and there wasn't an issue at all with when I would get my work done. Cause remember, I was the 100-hour-a-week girl. So I went down to a pretty manageable 25, 30 hours like I was supposed to do. And miraculously, God still had the ministry going without Shelley Haynes being there at every event. You know, it still worked. And that was a huge growing up for me, and loved it. And so I stayed there for 7. And then the day before I had my second daughter, I thought I would stay home and be a mom and not be a DCE anymore. And so I kind of bounced back. I was an Orange County person when I started. Then I went to LA County, and then I went back to Orange County just to help them with a confirmation program at a different church. And they ended up calling me, and I worked part-time there, doing confirmation in high school. And then when I left there, I'm back in LA County, and now I'm doing, and it's going to sound like, you know, I just said I learned my lesson, but it's going to sound like I didn't, but I really have women's college, high school, junior high confirmation, which is pretty much the same thing. Overseeing all of children and babies. But I'm not working 100 hours. Like, I have it manageable. But it's ridiculous.
What is family life like now?
Well, you know, it's what I learned from the master's program and just, I think my interesting gift set is really being able to sit and chat with people and listen to their experiences and show them where God is in those little pictures. And I don't get shocked when someone comes to me and says, oh, I have this crazy story, because I think maybe God blessed me with a crazy life to have some crazy experiences. So I know that God does things that are sort of outside the realm. Family ministry, especially where I'm at the church I serve now in Rancho Cucamonga, is very intergenerational, and wonderful fabric. It's a weave. So for instance, we just had Vacation Bible School, and we have parents and kids working together to serve kids in our community. We have grandparents and people that are empty nesters partnering with others to be greeters outside to welcome people in. We have ladies that probably wouldn't want the noise or excitement that VBS brings, but they are sewing little pouches. We did Hometown Nazareth, so they are sewing little pouches so that the kids can hold their shekels. And so many people binding together whenever there's an event. Our church's this particular circumstance of Shepherd of the Hills is we have a smaller sanctuary, so we do 4 services sort of every 58 minutes. You know, we have a 10-minute break.
Wow. Right?
So the morning is busy. And so the kids don't always get to see the older folks, but they make a point to make sure they're involved and invested I needed a volunteer for something, I have a college geometry or trigonometry professor who volunteers in a kids ministry that we do every Sunday morning where we teach kids how to worship. It's sort of a catechesis. We call it kids church. And she's one of the small group leaders. And it's so interesting to watch her in her 70s, you know, sitting with the kindergarten children, and everybody's, you know, loving that time with each other. And she helps once a month, so she has time to do other things with her time as well. But she really looks forward to that. Every first Sunday of the month, there she is, you know, excited to be a part of what's going on.
What do you love about being a DCE, especially a parish DCE?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like, it's, the parish is, I don't know, there's this, I think God touches down and he walks with you in a way that's different than just thinking about it at college or, you know, you are not allowed only a brain change in the parish. In the parish, there's so much more space for you to have a real heart or experience as God continues to grow you and education. Working in the church, I see the mom who comes with her kids and she's, you know, in a mess and her husband won't come to church and her kids are excited about what's happening and they're looking forward to it. But the mom is reluctant because she feels like, well, if people knew my story, then, you know, they wouldn't want to interact with me. But then she meets another lady who seems completely different in a different walk of life. And that lady invites her to come to Bible study. And so then they sit and the Bible study has been going through the book of John for 4 years, but those people love being together and they welcome this new woman in. And then she just can't get enough. She wants to see them. And so she joins an evening Bible study that's more topical. So now she's gone from being nothing to having two studies. And then there's a Dave Ramsey financial peace class and the husband comes with the wife because he's concerned about money. And now they're all four coming and worshiping together. And it's weird. It's reluctant. It's hesitant. And I think it's beautiful. I think then opening the scriptures to them and seeing how God keeps mapping it out. Like he mapped it out for the Israelites. He didn't leave anything. He didn't leave any stone unturned. Like he even mapped out debt relief in a sense, you know, the Jubilee year and the idea of having a Sabbath. And I don't know, church ministry is showing that the people, look, this isn't a happenstance. God's not surprised. You know, God's not chaotic. It's not a coincidence. God really has a plan. And his plan is that he loves you and cares about you. And he wants you to be in relationship with him. It's exciting. It's super fun.
What in just maybe a sentence or two, what is a DCE? What epitomizes your work as a director of Christian education?
I know, in a sense, it's you for me. I think a DCE is a lifespan family educator, someone mm-hmm. who is willing to stand in the trench with the person and point them to the cross.
What advice, if any, do you have for those who might be considering becoming a DCE in the future, might be thinking about that as a vocation? Don't do it. Run. No.
Well, I think it's very important, and I really do think it's very important that we are very aware that with the people coming in to study DCE ministry, that they are aware that it's not always roses. Mm-hmm. It's not embarrassing to say, you know, I was super cocky and then also I was a super big failure. That is the Christian life. But mm-hmm. I don't know that I knew that in college. Maybe they said it and I wasn't in a place where I could understand it. So I'll take that. I mean, that may be on me. I think it's important for us to be very mindful of, we do a different thing than the pastor does. When they're preaching and teaching the gospel, their role is very different in a sense than us as DCEs sort of coming alongside, standing in the trenches, being there. But to do that, it is a special and unique set. And I think it's something that God uses very powerfully within his church, but it's not necessarily for the faint of heart. It's not just fun youth nights where 100 kids show up, or like yesterday, Alex, a 17-year-old kid who came to youth group a few months ago, desired to be baptized, and we were able to baptize him. you know, in a special Wednesday night service, our pastor came down to do that. That's not, those are awesome mountaintop moments, but that's not all it is. And it's going to be discouraging sometimes, but I think God works in the discouragement. It's still fruitful. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Well, Shelley, I have enjoyed hearing about your life as a director of Christian education. I hope our listeners have learned as well about what it means to be a director of Christian education. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today and letting us who Shelley Haynes is and all that you get to do there at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church and the saints you serve with there in Rancho Cucamonga. Shelley Haynes, director of Christian education and family ministry at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, Rancho Cucamonga. Thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family.
Thanks so much.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.